Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Federal Habeas and the Look-Through Presumption Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On April 17, 2018, the Supreme Court decided Wilson v. Sellers, a case involving the standard federal court should use to analyze a state appellate court's summary denial of habeas relief when applying federal habeas law. In 1996, Marion Wilson was convicted of murder and sentenced to death, and both his conviction and sentence were confirmed on direct appeal. Wilson then sought habeas relief in state superior court, claiming that his trial counsel offered ineffective assistance in investigating mitigation evidence for purposes of sentencing. The superior court denied habeas relief, concluding that any new evidence was cumulative of evidence presented at trial, as well as inadmissible, and likely would not have changed the outcome. In a one-sentence order, the Georgia Supreme Court summarily denied Wilson's subsequent application for a certificate of probable cause to appeal. Wilson then filed a habeas petition in federal district court, which also denied relief. Even assuming Wilson's counsel had been deficient, the court deferred to the state habeas court's conclusion that these deficiencies did not ultimately cause prejudice to Wilson. On appeal, a divided U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit, sitting en banc, held that, rather than looking through the Georgia Supreme Court's summary denial to reasoning of the lower state habeas court, the district court should have considered what reasons could have supported the state Supreme Court's summary decision. The U.S. Supreme Court granted certiorari to resolve the resulting split among the circuit courts of appeals on whether federal habeas law employs a look-through presumption. By a vote of 6-3, the Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the 11th Circuit and remanded the case. In an opinion delivered by Justice Breyer, the court held that a federal habeas court reviewing an unexplained state court decision on the merits should look through that decision to the last related state court decision that provides a relevant rationale and presume that the unexplained decision adopted the same reasoning. The state may rebut the presumption by showing that the unexplained decision most likely relied on different grounds than the reasoned decision below. Justice Breyer's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Gorsuch filed a dissenting opinion, which was joined by Justices Thomas and Alito. And now, to discuss the case, we have Lee Radofsky, Solicitor General for the state of Arkansas.
I'm pleased to be with you to discuss the outcome and effect of Wilson v. Sellers. At the outset, let me offer a quick disclaimer. I authored the amicus brief on behalf of 25 states in support of Warden Sellers and the state of Georgia in this case. Our position lost the day, but it appeared to resonate heavily with the three dissenters in this case. Anyway, with that piece of housekeeping out of the way, let me jump right in. Wilson v. Sellers is a habeas case. It's about the proper way to apply 28 U.S.C. 2254D, a provision of the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, or AEDPA for short. 28 U.S.C. 2254D prevents a federal court from granting relief on any claim that was adjudicated on the merits in state court unless the adjudication of the claim, 1, resulted in a decision that was contrary to or involved an unreasonable application of clearly established federal law as determined by the Supreme Court of the United States, or 2, resulted in a decision that was based on an unreasonable determination of the facts in light of the evidence presented in the state court proceeding. In past cases, the Supreme Court confirmed that federal courts are supposed to apply the 2254D standard to the last state court merits adjudication, almost always meaning the highest state court adjudication. No one in this case questioned the propriety of that rule. The question the Supreme Court did confront in Wilson was how to apply 2254D where the highest state court's merits adjudication was a summary decision without a reasoned opinion. The plaintiff, Marion Wilson, was convicted for murder, among other crimes, and sentenced to death. Wilson filed a state court habeas petition alleging ineffective assistance of counsel. Wilson argued his counsel did not perform an adequate investigation for mitigating evidence. The lower state habeas court denied the state habeas petition, concluding the testimony would have been inadmissible, cumulative, and/or it wouldn't have changed the outcome of the trial. In short, the lower state habeas court concluded that the trial counsel was not deficient, and alternatively, that Wilson could not show prejudice. Wilson filed in the Georgia Supreme Court a certificate of probable cause to appeal. The Georgia Supreme Court summarily denied Wilson's request. This denial was considered a merits decision. The question that ultimately made its way to the Supreme Court was whether the federal courts should ascribe the specific reasons provided by the lower state court to the summary decision made by the Georgia Supreme Court, and thus focus solely on whether those specific reasons were unreasonable. Or, on the other hand, because a summary decision by the Georgia Supreme Court does not and did not necessarily adopt the reasoning of the lower state court, should the federal courts treat the Georgia decision as having no specific reasoning attached to it? If the latter was true, a prior Supreme Court precedent, Harrington v. Richter, would require that the state habeas decision be upheld by the federal court unless every possible or every conceivable basis for the decision was unreasonable. In a 6-3 opinion authored by Justice Breyer and joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Kagan, and Sotomayor, the court chose the first path. Specifically, the court decided that federal courts should, quote-unquote, presume that the unexplained decision of the highest court adopted the specific reasoning relied on by the lower state habeas court. However, what it gave with one hand, the court in some good measure took away with the other. The Supreme Court acknowledged numerous ways a state may rebut the presumption. And the court all but expressly conceded that if the lower state habeas court's reasoning was unreasonable, and the state's brief to the highest state habeas court included a more convincing alternative argument, that would be enough to rebut the presumption. The majority's opinion is most notable for the absence of any serious textual analysis of 2254D. Instead, the court adopts the presumption for three non-textual reasons. First, the court said the presumption is, quote-unquote, realistic, because summary decisions to affirm or deny are, at least in the majority's view, most often adoptions of lower court reasoning. Second, the court said the presumption is more efficient than requiring federal courts to imagine all the potential bases that a state court could have based its decision on. Third, the court pointed to a pre-EDPA habeas case called Ilst v. Nunnemaker, where the Supreme Court had applied a presumption to find that an unexplained habeas decision was based not on a merits decision, but on a procedural default identified in an earlier decision. The Supreme Court decided that Ilst was more applicable in the present case than Richter was. The court narrowly confined Richter to the situation where there is no reasoned state court opinion from any level of the state judiciary. In terms of the future impacts of this decision, the most important part of the opinion is Part 3. In that part, the court first agreed that there would be many cases in which the presumption does not accurately identify the ground for the highest state court's real decision. That tells us the Supreme Court envisions that the presumption will be rebutted in numerous cases. The majority next agreed that the unreasonableness of a lower state court opinion is itself, quote unquote, some evidence that the highest state court relied on alternative grounds, and would rebut the presumption if it was combined with evidence that either, one, a reasonable alternative ground was actually raised in the briefing to the highest state court, or two, in federal habeas briefing, the state showed that a reasonable alternative ground for affirmance existed in the state record, whether or not it was specifically argued in the state briefing to the state's highest court. That tells us, going forward, there are going to be long, arduous, and time-consuming fights in federal district courts as each side attempts to convince the federal district judge what the specific reasoning of the highest state court was in a specific case. And federal district judges are going to have far more discretion in ascribing one particular reason to state court summary decisions, then concluding that the ascribed reason was unreasonable, and then proceeding with a de novo, non-deferential review of other possible grounds for denying habeas relief. Perhaps the most worrisome portion of Part 3 is where the majority addresses the Georgia Supreme Court's very recent order, expressly stating that its summary decisions should not be read to adopt the lower court's reasonings. It appears that despite this clear direction from the Georgia Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court majority would continue to impose the presumption unless the state shows a different rationale actually underlay the Georgia Supreme Court's summary decision in a specific case. As the dissent in this case implies, that is quite a radical position to take, one disavowed by every single judge to decide this case prior to the Supreme Court. It actually tells us what this case is really about. The majority believes and believed that Richter and its rule that an unexplained state high court judgment should not be overturned unless every conceivable possible basis for the decision is unreasonable was too deferential a standard, and it was too lenient on the states. In my view, the majority's real purpose here is to narrow the set of circumstances in which the very deferential 2254D test is applied to all possible bases for an unexplained state court decision. This is quite an ironic goal, since the entire purpose of AEDPA was to ensure federal courts would be more deferential to state habeas court decisions than they had been in the past. Without walking through the entire dissent, I do want to highlight two specific portions of Justice Gorsuch's dissent, which was joined by Justices Thomas and Alito. First, Justice Gorsuch noted the irony of federal courts presuming that higher state courts' summary decisions automatically adopted the reasoning of lower state court decisions. The United States Supreme Court has repeatedly made clear that summary decisions by it or by federal appellate courts may not and should not be assumed to adopt the reasoning of lower federal courts. Why should the federal court ignore a state court system that says the same thing, especially in an area where deference to state courts is supposed to be at its highest? Second, Justice Gorsuch suspects that the game isn't worth the candle. Given the number of ways and ease with which the state can rebut the presumption, Justice Gorsuch and the dissenters suggest that the practical result of this case will be very nearly the same as if the presumption was not applied in the first place. I hope he's correct. I'm a little more reticent on this front. I see the potential for this opinion to narrow the scope of deference provided to state courts. I also see continued litigation and repeat trips to the Supreme Court to iron out situations in which the presumption can be overcome. We shall see as this plays out in the future.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.